But also there are several other areas. Who else is out there? Circle Sisters, ECNA, Tri-County. Yes, Tri-County next month. If you haven't registered for Tri-County, please register for Tri-County. Support the Tri-County area. And of course, HACNA has early registration for HACNA 14. So without anything further, the person who's going to introduce our speaker today is Raymond L. Raymond, can you come on up?
Good morning, everybody. I'm Nadine Raymond. I'm also J-Lo's husband, so. Yeah. Many moons ago, they just say, yeah, you know Jeanette, that's GQ's girl. But now it's like, no, I'm J-Lo's husband. Yeah. Hey, man, it's a privilege and honor to introduce our Sunday morning speaker right here. You know, HACNA, you guys did an amazing job, so please give HACNA committee another. It's an amazing job. And so I've known our Sunday morning speaker Randy for a few years, man. And you know, of course, we brought him to San Antonio 1 year, a few years back, and we've been able to captivate that relationship. You know, and I know that he loves his wife dearly. I know he loves his daughter dearly. You know, we got to spend some time with them and stuff. But what I love about Randy is that he won't talk for a few weeks or a month, and then he'll send a text with some literature-based stuff that just blows me away, and I'm over trying to find out, where do you get that shit? Where do you get that shit? Or he'll say, hey, what's up, Raymond? And then I'll say, hey, what's going on, Randy? And he won't answer for like an hour. I thought he wanted to, you know, rap and stuff, right? And she goes, oh, man, Raymond, I'm sorry, man. I had to go do a class. Like, he worked at a treatment facility. So he'll go break off the dudes in the treatment facility and stuff like that. And then he'll come back, you know, and I was like, man, that was great, dude. That's great. But, you know, like next time, you know, let me know. I ain't got to answer for an hour, you know. But, you know, it's been a pleasure, man, you know, getting to know Randy. And I know that if he can do it, anybody can do it, man. Because, you know, and that's not to put him down. His story is so powerful. That if you are on the fence, because by now you should know there's no fence, you know, either you're going to get busy living or you get busy dying, Randy's going to help you get busy living, man. So without further ado, Randy Q from East L.A.
My name is Randy. I'm an addict. Good morning.
Good morning.
And I want to keep my phone right here so we could end on time. Take my wallet out. I don't like lumps in my, I want to be free. I want to, you know what I mean? I want to make this my podium for the next, I don't know, 30, 35, 40 minutes. However long the spirit flies. And I want to thank God for God's grace and God's mercy and getting me here, helping to get me here. I want to thank the Houston area, HACNA, for doing a wonderful job and having this convention and inviting me, and particularly Cammie and Tony M for having me come out here and participate in my recovery. I'm forever grateful for that. And, you know, I'm gonna dive right into it, you guys. I'm 47 years old. I know I look 21, but I'm 47 years old. I will be 48 November the 21st. I have 19 years and 8 months clean. I will have, yeah, I'll take that applause. That was a long road, man. That's a lot. It took 19 years to get 19 years. January 20th is my clean date. I'll be celebrating a dub. I'm a heroin addict. I'm a dope fiend all the way to the bottom of my feet. And God's grace and God's mercy, man. You know, over in England, they had this linguistic contest, the study and the interpretation of words. And in England, they had this this debate over whether complete and finished meant the same thing. And there was a guy from the United States. He was actually Indian American from India. His name was Sherman Sharady, and he actually won the debate over whether or not complete and finished meant the same thing by making this statement. He said, when you marry the right woman, you are complete. If you marry the wrong woman, then you are finished. And if the right woman catches you with the wrong woman, then you are completely finished. Right? Thank God I married the right woman. You know, I'm gonna borrow a sentence from my good friend Raymond R. God blinded a woman long enough to marry a fool like me. My wife has 30 years clean. My wife is back home right now. I spoke to her in the corner. She's an encourager. She always builds me up. I got that kind of wife, man. And she's back home right now taking care of business. I've been with my wife for 7 years. And it's through her that I found out that relationships are also psychological. Relationships are not just physical. Relationships start outside the bedroom. And relationships are not just physical, they're also psychological. One of you is psycho and the other one is logical, right? She's the psycho one and I'm the logical one, right? Back home, everybody loves us because they know how insane she is and how serene I am, right? I have 3 kids. I have a daughter, a 13-year-old little girl, gonna be 14 in about 2 more months. She has a front row seat in my heart. Her name is Sylvia Brandy. I also have 2 sons that I made in the heart of my addiction. I did not raise them. A 29-year-old son named Carlos, a 28-year-old son named Sal. Both of them are married. They live in Colorado. My 13-year-old daughter lives at home with daddy. And my oldest son, Carlos, when he gets into arguments with his wife, he always calls me up. That's how I know that. Oh, they got in a fight. So Carlos will call me up, and he's always telling me to teach him how women think. That's a big task, right? He wants me to help him figure out what makes women tick. And this is the best answer I could give him. I said, son, when you can figure out why pizzas are round, but go in a square box and eating in triangles, then you will know what makes women tick. That's a hell of a task. It was the Scottish philosopher William Berkeley that once said, to give without remembering and to receive without forgetting. And what I've been receiving from Houston Area Convention this weekend, I will never forget. What I've been receiving from Tony M, GQ, and J-Lo over the last couple of years, the love, I will never forget. What I've been receiving from Narcotics Anonymous for the last 19 and a half years, I will never, 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 never forget. Narcotics Anonymous is the program that houses the passion of my heart. I've done all my growing right here in Narcotics Anonymous. Every single time my life went to the next level, it was a direct result of Narcotics Anonymous. I did all my growing here, and there is a difference between growing and swallowing. And the difference is swallowing is when you come to a convention or go to a meeting and you get information that blows you up, puffs you up, and you don't apply it the next day and you go back down. Growing is when you apply the information. The best evidence of growth is application. Once you get stretched, you never go back into the shape you were once in. Growing is sustained change. Many addicts in Narcotics Anonymous are spiritual POWs. They struggle with character defects. When we get here, we have a disease that is well established, well trained. I am one of them addicts that believe I had a disease way before drugs came into picture. I have a disease that is strong. In fact, this disease is so strong, when I put down the drugs, it's seen that as an opportunity, as a new opportunity to show how strong it really is. And sometimes we're spiritual POWs, man. The reason why is because we get caught up in character defects. And when you don't have a program and principles and a God to combat that, character defects will take you someplace you don't want to go. In your kitchen, you have a refrigerator, you have a stove, you have a microwave, you have a toaster, you have a coffee maker. All these appliances are different, but they all find their power through the same source, electricity. All my character defects are plugged into the source of this disease, and it is called addiction. I know a lot of people, including myself, that have been caught up, locked and loaded, obsessed, character defect up, diseased up. You could actually be caught up, know you're caught up, don't want to be caught up, but can't get out. And it's like being inside the penitentiary and somebody throws away the key and the best you could do is decorate the cell. Put pictures up. And the way to get caught up is through honesty, open mind. The way to get out is through honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness is telling somebody. This disease don't want you telling nobody. This disease don't want you talking. So he could keep his hooks in you, keep you handcuffed. The difference between illness and wellness is replacing the I with the we. This program has we all through it for a reason. This is a we program. Now, you don't have to have a whole gang of friends, but you got to have a couple of friends. I'd rather have four quarters than 100 pennies. You got to have a few people in your life that know everything about you. I was born, and let me tell you a little bit of my story. I was born and raised in East LA. I lived in the projects. I grew up in the neighborhood. That's the barrio I got into. East LA projects called Dogtown Projects. That's where I first put a needle in my arm. That's where I first hold a girl's hand. That's where I first got jumped in the neighborhood. That's where I first got high. That's where I first got arrested. That's where I first got my head cracked in Dogtown Projects down in East LA. My mother's a heroin addict, a hype. They called us hypes. The Gatos, my dad is a heroin addict. My brother's a heroin addict. Everybody in the family tree is a heroin addict. My grandmother was a heroin dealer. My grandmother sold heroin, carga, balloons, chiva, whatever you want to call it. H, skag, doogie. Depending on what part of the country you're from, heroin. My grandmother sold heroin for 40 years. Not like 2 months to get a bill paid. 40 years, man. My grandmother sold heroin for 40 years, never ever changed her life, went to her grave selling her last $20 bag in 2004. My father shot dope, and he was on methadone down in East L.A. So was my mother. I got a real crazy family. My mother did 17 years in the state penitentiary in CIW, CRC, Avenal State Prison, Colinga State Prison. She racked up 17 years. My father, Pelon, he did 10 years in a place called Folsom State Prison. They call Folsom, get a load of this, Dracula's house. That's what they call Folsom State Prison, Dracula's house. Oh, he's in Dracula's house, Holmes. My dad did 10 years in Dracula's house. I got a brother named Robert Turtle that did 29 years in Corcoran State Prison. Looks just like me, tattooed from his chin all the way down to his toes, man. My dad and mom, I don't have an old school Mexican family, mariachis making tortacho. I don't have that kind of old school. That's just the way this thing went. I got a Motown family. I got the way you do the things you do type family system. And my dad's favorite singer was a guy named Gene Chandler. Rainbow, the laugh is mine. My mother's favorite group was a group called the Chantels. That was what I grew up on. Zap, Gap Band, Tina Marie, Mary Jane Girls, Rick James before he turned all weird. Rick James. War, Al Green. I grew up on all that music, and it was real sad. We had a couch with no legs, and my dad and mom would sit on the couch this far off the floor, almost overdosed, with needles hanging out of their arm. And I remember pushing the chair against the refrigerator to get myself some Chocodile or Fruity Pebbles because I was hungry. School was never enforced in my house. Nobody said, Mio, stay in school. Don't do what we did. They were too busy and checked out mentally, emotionally, and spiritually on heroin. I turned to the neighborhood because my big brother turned to the gang first. And my brother was my higher power. If I had an issue with somebody in the neighborhood, I turned it over to him and he would handle it. I followed his footsteps right into the neighborhood, and I actually wore khakis up to the whole East L.A. deal. I wore khakis up to my, about right here. I wore really, really big and hush puppies and V-neck sweaters and three-flower grease and a hairnet, man, and in and out of juvenile hall, East Lake Juvenile Hall, all my teenage years, did youth detention, did a couple of, about 10 months in youth camp, and went to East L.A. Skill Center. We called it East L.A. Gang Center. It was just a cover-up to get the P.O. off your back. It was really a party school where you hooked up, where you fought in the back of the school, man. There was only like 30 students, and everybody was gang members coming out of juvenile camp. We were on East L.A. gang unit probation. That's where I met the mother of my two sons that live in Colorado that's trying to figure out women. That's where I met their mother. Her name was Cookie, out of South Central. And in and out of the county jail. Then I finally hit the penitentiary. I did 7 years in the penitentiary, but most of my pain was on the streets when I was stinky, when my socks would stick to my feet, and my feet smelled so bad you could smell the smell through the shoe. I'm running around Boyle Heights, East L.A. I'm a size 9. I got on size 12, Converse, big old ducks, big old boots with no shoelaces. I did push a shopping cart. I went into your yard and took your cans and took your dish set and took your parakeet and took your garden hose. water hose, right? Took these to the connection. This is what you need, I heard. And my disease had me nuts. I have 13 abscesses. I have busted up abscesses. I was hospitalized at the General Hospital in Boyle Heights, out from Marengo, on the third floor for 13 abscesses. Big old warm balls that they would lance, and you could smell it, drain it, stuff it with gauze, wrap it, give you a brown paper bag with some extra gauze, and you get out of her chump. And there I go, man, hustling and panhandling. King Taco was my spot. That's a franchise down in East LA, Boyle Heights. And I remember being 18 years old and homeless and raining at 1 in the morning, and King Taco was 24 hours, and it's raining, and I got a thin white t-shirt on, and I'm panhandling right next to the door, and if you pulled up, I would open the door with you, and I would go like that. I did nuts, right? And I would go like that, and can you help a brother out on your way out? And I remember there was, I don't know why this sticks out. I was 18 years old, and there was a dude that drove up my age with a beautiful girl, and they were dressed like they just came from a fancy event. And the guy pulled up, he got off the car, went to her side, opened the door, very gentleman-like, treating her like a queen. And that particular moment, to see this guy that was my age with that car and that girl gonna go eat some tacos right after the event, that hurt it so bad inside me, because by then I have on one brown shoe, one black shoe. I smelled, I was up for days, and people are going to, you ever been caught on a run with daylight coming up, and people are going to work, and people are going to school. Look at that, they got to, they're 9 years old, man. And the high school kids, you can smell their cologne. And I had my own set of flies circling me, and I smelled and wanted to get out of that lifestyle, man. And I seen my parents hooked all my life. So when I put the needle in my arm, I knew this is not 6 months. I knew you're locked into this for a long time. My mother got clean. My mother got clean July 19, 1994. My mother got clean because there was a girl that my mother did time with, and she introduced my mother to Narcotics Anonymous. And this girl, her name was Bertha, right? This girl, her name was Bertha from Primera Flats, East LA, Boyle Heights. And she's been doing time with my mother since she was, my mom been doing time since she was 12 years old in YA. And they knew each other from YA at 12 years old. And now they're in, my mother got clean at 46 years old. And my mother is sitting at a bus stop on Brooklyn and Soto. And this woman seen my mother and helped my mother make it to Narcotics Anonymous. And my mother has 25 years clean. Never turned back. Mom has 25 years clean, never turned back. My mother helped my father, the Gene Chandler addict, helped my father get into treatment. My father got clean. He died with stage 4 cirrhosis of the liver. His hepatitis C advanced into cirrhosis, and he ended up dying with 15 years in this program. But my father got clean at 50. He met a girl at 54, fell in love at 55, got married at 56. I was his best man. He adopted 2 kids. He became a foster care licensed parent, even with felonies on his record. He adopted 2 kids out of the system, started raising them. My father died at 69 years old with 15 years in his program. His wife, Linda, has 26 years clean. She's still clean and part of my family, in contact with us today. She's raising Katrina, the little boy went to my brother's old lady. My brother died in this program 3 years ago of a heroin overdose. My brother that did a lot of prison time ended up relapsing, lasted a whole year on his relapse, finally died. We buried him July 19th of 2016. If you remember, I said my mother's clean date is July 19, 1994. My brother Robert died on her birthday. When I got clean, you guys, I went to a treatment center with my pops. My mother helped my dad get in treatment, and then I went into this treatment center with my father, man. I'm taking you guys to way back town. I got in the treatment. Me and my dad are doing GI and kitchen cleanup together, doing groups together, and doing push-ups in the room together and studying the Just for Today, and we both stayed clean since that treatment center. My mother was the runner with the coffee and the cigarettes. At that time, I smoked. We both stood clean. Around 50 days into that program, I decided to get up and leave. My father stood in that treatment center for 16 months. I went to go live on my mother's couch, and my mother did not charge me rent. All she said is, all you got to do is meetings. So I went to 3 meetings a day for that first year, and then the next 2 years, I went to 1 meeting a day. My first 3 years, I did not miss a meeting. If you're new in this program, when you're new, hit it hard, right? When you're new in this program, hit it hard. Start putting that foundation together immediately, because life is going to hit you hard at some point, and you need strength in your legs. Life on life's terms, you need to put strength in your legs to help you carry the amount of responsibility you're going to have to carry in this program. At 7 years clean, I started dating this girl that worked at a treatment center that my father worked for, and I always worked in treatment. I've been a drug counselor for almost 19 years. I always worked in treatment. There was a girl that was a receptionist at the treatment center my father worked at, and I started talking. I used to call my dad, and she would answer, and the voice was cute. So it hooked me. I started talking to her. Before you know it, I moved her in 1 week. Right? I started talking to her. 7 days later, she lives with me. She relapsed and was pregnant, and I didn't know. I found out when my daughter Sylvia was like 14 months old. They called my mother and told my mother, "You have a granddaughter. A baby belongs to Randy." My mother told me. And I already had 2 big kids that I didn't raise and just paid child support. So when she said, "You got a baby," my mind, my disease heard, "You got 18 more years of child support. Congratulations. You know you ain't going to raise this baby. Blah, 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 blah." You know how this thing operates, man. My mother went to go meet the baby, and she brought home photographs. And she dropped these photographs on my coffee table, and she walked out the door. And I looked at these pictures of Sylvia, and it's like this baby walked off this picture into my heart. And I told my mother, "I want to meet the baby." And when I met the baby, I brought her home the very next weekend, and that was 12 years ago. I've been raising my daughter. My wife today is not the biological mother of my daughter. We do have that blended family type deal. My daughter lives with me. She's my responsibility. She's mine. At 10 years clean, I moved to New York City, and I lived in New York for about a year. And I came back to L.A., and I got a job back in treatment center. The reason why I went to New York City was for spiritual reasons, and I'm not afraid to talk about God. This is Sunday. This is the spiritual meeting. I do want to say this, man, that sometimes we question whether there is a God or not, or is the concept of a higher power strictly human-made to make us feel good and make us feel comfortable. I happen to have faith. I happen to believe that there is a higher power. I happen to believe that there is a God. And what supports that for me is strictly a belief. It is not scientific fact. It is a belief. Faith begins where logic ends. In my mind, I believe in a higher power because of the evidence that is in my own life and the evidence that is in the lives of the people that I hang out with. All these people have productive, they're clean, and they have productive living lifestyles, and it is not the result of luck. I am not here because of chance or luck. Look at how many people. You mean to tell me every one of us is here because of luck? There's way too many of us, man. So that tells me that there is a spiritual power threaded all through the fabric of Narcotics Anonymous. I have too many near-death experiences that have no sensible explanation. I gotta give it up to a power greater than myself. When I look back to where I was and I look at where I am and it don't add up, I have to give it up to a power greater than myself who brought me here, the miracle of recovery. Now, sometimes we think that the miracle of recovery is one-sided. Let me tell you what I mean by that. Sometimes we think the miracle of recovery is one-sided. In other words, God does all the work, and the addict is the beneficiary of all God's effort, and that's not how this works at all. The miracle of recovery is co-created. In other words, in the beginning, the infant, the first stage is a divine intervention, all God. An intervention is interrupting the course you were on. So the first part of my recovery is strictly God, a divine intervention. But I do the work to keep this miracle operating. It is co-creative. In other words, God is not going to call your sponsor for you. God is not going to a meeting for you. God is not going to write your fourth step for you. There is a part that we play in this deal to keep it going. Here is another concept illusion I want to step on, is that the miracle that God gives us is not permanent. In other words, there is no cure for our disease. The miracle of recovery is just for today, a daily reprieve. It's not permanent. There is no cure for this deal that we got. This is a daily thing, and hopefully we start off, preferably in the morning, going to the source of the miracle. Then you do what you need to do to stay clean in the here and now. This is not a permanent miracle. No matter how much you talk to your sponsor, no matter how many steps you write on, no matter how many meetings you go to, you can never un-addict yourself. One of the defining characteristics of our disease is that it's incurable. That means we need to stay in the process. The girl last night, Veronica, she was cold, boy. I wrote so many notes to bring back to the fellowship in LA, my sponsees and all that. When I said there's too much evidence of change, if you guys would have met me and look at me now, you can't see the power behind the change, but you can see the change. I sponsor five men. All five are active, but there's two in particular I want to mention real quick. I sponsor a guy named Angel E. East LA Angel, not there's another Angel on the East Coast. But I sponsor a guy named Angel, and this guy been shot, stabbed, ran over by a car, and he lived. And this guy got revenged and did 20 years in Pelican Bay for murder. Let me say that again. He's been shot, stabbed, ran over by a car. Then he picked up a hot one and did 20 years straight in Pelican Bay State Prison. Angel has a year clean, 3 kids, and he's getting married in a couple of months. There is too much evidence of people going from brokenness to healing. The other sponsee I want to mention is a guy named Carlos D. And Carlos's story is his father died in overdose on heroin when he was 6 years old. His mother is still using and strung out to today. He was grandma raised, and he has a grandmother that is old and old school and cannot control him once he turned 12 years old. Carlos turned to the neighborhood and picked up an attempted murder at the age of 16. And when Carlos was in court at 16 years old with grandma sitting in the back of the courtroom with a Bible, try to get her grandkid off the hook. Grandma took a Bible to court. Went a big one so the judge could see. Right? The DA told the judge, "Your Honor, this is a known gang member with no regard for human life." When she said, "This is a known gang member with no regard for human life," the grandmother in back of the courtroom screamed. When Carlos, at 16 years old, who was being tried as an adult, heard that, in his mind, he arrived. It was like a badge of honor. They gave Carlos 19 years. At 16 years old, he went to the joint and did 19 years. Half of his time was in the SHU program, in the hole. And in California, when you do so much time in the hole, in isolation, you are eligible for disability when you get out. So they drafted his paperwork and brought him the SSI papers because he couldn't function in society. He was getting close to his parole date. He refused it and said, "Nah, I want to make it on my own." Carlos paroled and fell flat on his face within 30 days, strung out on heroin. Carlos's parole agent refused to send him back to the penitentiary in a violation and send him to a treatment center where I worked. I'm standing in this treatment center watching Carlos, big old essay, 6'4". We're not very big, Mexican, right? Our best is 5'10", right? Carlos is like 6'3", 280 pounds, tatted up, walks into the treatment center, shackled and chained up with an old parole agent, a woman, holding his little, little old lady. We walked in this treatment center like this. And at that point, it was like God tapped me on my shoulder and said, "There's one for you." Right there. I've been sponsoring Carlos for 5 years. He's on his second semester of college. He has his own apartment. When he's so used to having a cell, now he has his own apartment, a job, and he's on his second semester of college. There is too much evidence of people going from brokenness to healing in this process. We'll take that applause. When I first got clean, I had tattoos on my neck and my face, a straight-up gangbanger, man. I took all these tattoos off. I went back to school. I don't know where Tony is at, like Tony. I went back to school. I got a couple of counseling degrees. I got a bachelor's degree. I started traveling. I started going all over the world. I wanted to get exposed. You can't live on a level you've never been exposed to. You know, and I was raised in a cave, taught in a corner, lived my life in a drawer. I was always taught that you don't go to the other side of the tracks. You don't play with different kind of people than you, man. And all that stuff was a lie. The lie is dead. If you want to grow, if you want to stretch, if you want to live a life beyond your wildest dreams, you have got to network around this program where diversity is our strength. It's other people that have other information, other backgrounds, other cultures that bring information to the table, and it widens the options in your life. You will get broadened. You will get stretched. You will see that it is okay, that this was always a lie. I just want to say this, man. Let me say this real quick, okay? So I went to school. I got a bachelor's degree. I started off in New York City doing some training for some spiritual stuff, man. And I lived out there for a whole year. I came back home, met my wife, got my job back, and I entered school. I did 7.5 years of school, and I graduated cap and gown in Dallas, Texas. I had to fly from LA to Dallas, Texas. I gave my mother something that she always wanted. She's 71 years old. She's She's an old dolphin with 71 years old. I take her with me whenever I can. I understand that's moms. You get one a box, and she sits on her favorite chair and her pad with my daughter, who is her granddaughter. My mother messed me up, man. My mom messed me up, and she does her 9-step to me through my daughter. I'm totally fine with that. My mother cooks for me once a week, old school enchiladas and chicken mole and chicken tacos, right, and cocido and a bondiga soup and all these things. And I was in school, and she would call me, say, "Mijo, come eat." And I would always say, "Not now, Mom, I'm busy, I'm doing schoolwork." "Mijo, come eat." "Not now, Mom, I'm doing schoolwork." "Mijo, come eat." "Not now, Mom, I'm doing schoolwork." And one time that pissed her off, right? She said, "Mijo, you need to get with some of these old timers who no longer have a mother, who will die for a home cooked meal." That was like a slap. I said, "All right, Mom, I'll be right there." Right? That was like a slap in the face. Since that talk, I had a deeper appreciation for my mother, and I try my hardest to take her everywhere that I go. I travel. I've been to Africa. I've been to England. I've been to Sweden. I've been to Greece. I've been to Turkey. I've been to Puerto Rico. I've been all over this world, man. Alaska, New York, you name it. I've been there. Rome, Israel, all over Jerusalem. And I finally got my degree, and I got my degree in theology. And that took 7.5 years. Then I started working on my master's program, like you, Tony. I started working on my master's program. But after 7.5 years of theology school, I graduated. 8 months later, I got ordained. I got an ordination dinner and ceremony with candles and all that stuff. A nice dinner with all my family, with all these ministers laying hands on me. 3 months, now I don't want you to get something twisted. I'm an addict down to the bottom of my feet. My life is grounded in Narcotics Anonymous. So after 7.5 years, I got my degree. And then 8 months after that, I got ordained. And then 3 months after that, I got a church. So I run a church right now back home. And I still believe, I want you to hear this, guys. I still believe that Narcotics Anonymous is the best medicine for addicts. This stuff here, right? This stuff here is our medicine, and it needs to be taken. If I have a headache and I go to Kaiser Hall, I don't know if you guys got, I got Kaiser insurance. When something is ailing and aching and illness inside my body, and I go to the doctor, they write me a prescription, I go to the pharmacy and I get this medicine. I don't put the medicine on top of my head and expect to get better. I have to open the medicine, take it on the inside. It has to get in my system. It has to be a part of me for me to start getting better. We don't, in Narcotics Anonymous, we don't just memorize stuff and have head knowledge. This needs to be internalized. It needs to be a part of your life, a part. Now, NA recovery is not something you do on the side like golf. This is something, man, that is a lifestyle and a mentality. There's two levels of belief. There's two levels of belief. One level is I believe In-N-Out Burger is the best burger in the world. I know I'm in Whataburger Town. I know I'm in Whataburger Town. I have a belief that In-N-Out Burger is the best burger in the world. Am I willing to die for that belief? No. I know where I'm at. No, I'm not willing to die for that belief. That's one level of belief. The other level of belief is called a central belief. And a central belief is something you're willing to build your life around. Narcotics Anonymous is a central belief. This is something that I have been building my life around. And it's been working for 19 years and 8 months. I love Narcotics Anonymous. It got my whole family clean. It's made, made changes. It made me grow up. It made me have integrity. It made me have character. It made me become a father to my little daughter, a good husband, a good son to mama. It opened up my world. It opened up my mind. And this journey internally, the journey inward has been like being on Route 66, man. You just look out the window and experience so many different things. The journey is on the inside, man. And the older I get, the less I'm impressed with your intelligence or your. The older I get, the more I appreciate kindness. Do you got some nice on the inside of you? A spiritual principle is where it's at for me. I'm going to tell this story, man, and I'm going to tell two stories real quick, then we're done, okay? The first story is about the first grader, the fourth grader, and the eighth grader. The first grader, the fourth grader, and the eighth grader. There's a first grader who's a little kid, small kid, skinny kid. His mother gives him lunch money. He gets to school, and at school is a fourth grader, fat kid, big kid, always bullies the first grader, nice kid, skinny kid, takes all his money. Every day this is happening, man. Eighth grader sees what's going on. The eighth grader walks up to the first grader, small kid, skinny kid, and says, "Hey, kid, are you tired?" The first grader goes, "Yeah, I'm tired, man." He said, "Would you like all this to stop?" The first grader goes, "Yeah, I want it all to stop." The eighth grader goes, "Tomorrow morning, I want you to meet me in front of the school, and I will walk you across the schoolyard to get to your classroom so the fourth grader won't hurt you." The next day comes, the first grader, little kid, skinny kid, nice kid, his mother gives him money. He goes to the front of the school. The eighth grader is right there exactly in the morning at the exact time he said he will be there. He grabs his hand. He says, "Hey, kid, are you ready?" The first grader goes, "Yeah, man, I'm ready." He starts walking him across the schoolyard. And who's standing right there? The fourth grader, the fat kid, the bully. And he's making these faces and he's talking shit. He says, "Don't let me catch you alone. If I catch you alone, I'm going to get you. Your ass is mine. And you can't be with him all the time. I'll get you." He's talking, but he can't do nothing because the eighth grader is twice the size of the fourth grader and will kick his little fat ass. Right? The eighth grader gets the first grader from point A to point B, his classroom. He says, "Hey, kid, did you like that?" The kid goes, "Yeah." He says, "You still got all your money in your pocket?" The first grader, look, he goes, yeah, how was your neck feel? It feels great, man. He says, do you want to do it again tomorrow? The first grader, skinny kid, nice kid, says yes. The eighth grader goes, I will meet you in front of the schoolyard every single day. You just got to show up. The first grader is the addict. The first grader is me and you. The fourth grader is your disease, a bully. He will always kick your ass. He will always take your money. The eighth grader is your higher power. Now, we could tell you, right, we could tell you who your first grader is, the addict. We could tell you who the fourth grader is, your disease. What we can't tell you in Narcotics Anonymous is who your eighth grader is. All we could tell you is you better get one or you're gonna get a foot up your ass. You better get a higher power, right? The other story is in 2012 I had an opportunity to go over to Israel. And my daughter was 4 years old. I wasn't with my wife yet. I went over to Israel. There was 100 of us. And we went for 10 days and we stayed at five-star restaurants. We ate at five-star restaurants every day. And we had round tables like this at every restaurant. And each day we had to sit with different people. And when you sat and dined with different people, you had to mingle and get to know each other. Now, out of the 100 people that went, one person was brown and one person was black, a woman named Valerie, and 98 people were white. So when me and Valerie finally sat together and we started talking, she started asking all these questions. She seen my ink and tattoos and what do you do for a living? And I said, I'm clean, 12 years. I was a heroin addict. I found safer. I said, I'm a dopey, been in a penitentiary. I'm clean, and I'm a single father. I haven't met my wife yet, and I'm a single father. She said, how'd you get here? I said, I put all my nickels, dimes, and quarters, and income tax. I put it all together because I want to get exposed. Before my eyes shut in the coffin permanently, I want to see God's green earth. So we had to exchange phone numbers and emails. When we got back to the United States from Israel, I get an email from Valerie. And it said, Randy, I just want to let you know that my daughter is a big shot at Disneyland. Some department, I don't know what, she was a vice president of one of the departments. She said, I just want to let you know my daughter is a vice president of some department over in Disneyland, and we want to bless you with a free parking, 2 tickets, free dinner, and a $100 gift certificate to buy your daughter anything she wants over at Disneyland. I said, where do I sign? Right? She said, the addict's favorite word, free. Where do I sign? And at the time, Sylvia was 4 years old and she was watching a whole lot of Disney Channel. And Disney Channel pops up Mickey Mouse in the Magic Castle. When I took my daughter to Disneyland, right there at the entrance, right at the tunnel, man, right at the entrance was Mickey Mouse. And he was taking pictures with all these kids and there was a line. My daughter's tugging on me, doesn't know how to fully speak in sentences or articulate things inside of her. She just points. I knew she wanted a picture with Mickey Mouse, and we stood in line and took pictures. And when I grabbed her hand to walk into the theme park, she kind of held back, like tugged back. And I went again, and she kind of tugged back, like looked at me like, you idiot. We got Mickey Mouse right here. This is Disneyland. I had to pick her up, and she was making a tantrum and making a scene. And in Disneyland in California, you walk through this little thin, it's a thin street. It looks like a cowboy saloon town. I'm walking her through here, and when we turned the first corner, there was a candy store right at the corner when we turned. And she said these words. She said, oh. And then we walked a little further and walked around another corner, and there were two Disney princesses dressed up taking pictures, and my daughter said, "Oh." We walked a little further into the park and turned the next corner, and there it was, the Magic Castle. And she said, "Oh." And Sylvia began to see that the further we went into the park, around every corner was an "oh" moment. And I say that to say this, in Narcotics Anonymous, when you come to a convention or a meeting, that is just the entrance. That's Mickey Mouse. The longer you stay clean, the further you go in this journey, you will begin to see around every corner of your recovery is an "oh" moment. My name's Randy. I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share.